I'm Tammy Vindonge, your host for Executive with a Cause. Today on the show, I welcome Rodney Farrell, the founder of PN Digital, a digital marketing agency that specializes in supporting not-for-profits with their needs. Today, we're going to chat about the good, the bad, and hard things about digital marketing in the sector. Rodney, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tammy. Thanks for having me.
Now, tell us how you got into digital marketing to begin with.
Yeah, sure. So now thinking back, it's probably half of my life, basically, that long ago. I was 19. I used to ref, coach, and play basketball, and the local stadium there wanted a thing called a website, which is brand new. No one kind of knew what that was. I was studying uni at a time, and I bought this software called FrontPage. I think it was FrontPage.
I remember that. Yes,
you do.
I do. I've used it.
Oh, there you go. It had these like glowy buttons and firework things, and I was like, "Oh, I'll learn how to do this." And they paid me, I think it was something like $600 for the website, and the software cost me $198. I was like, "Wow, what just happened?" You know. And then later on, I had to go to my optometrist to get glasses. And I was like, do you need this thing called a website? And they're like, yeah, sure. And I got paid with a pair of glasses and they gave me $900. And I was like, oh, there's something here. So yeah, back in the day before Google, it was called Alta Vista and Excite and all those things. That's when I kind of started stumbling upon my curiosity to learn something new that was moving a lot faster than uni was. I dropped out of uni in the third year. And I really was interested to see what this thing was happening that was taking over.
So was that probably mid-90s, around that time?
Yeah, it was late 90s. Yeah, late 90s. 98, 99. Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely before a lot of the changes. I remember actually teaching a introduction to business class for a university, and nothing in the textbook about that time had anything about the internet in it.
Correct.
And I had to supplement it completely. So I totally get what you're talking about in terms of.
Well, you did a really good job. You really did a good job supplementing, because the reason I dropped out was because the lecturers didn't.
They didn't have that in there. Yeah. Well, it was something that I couldn't ignore for sure. Now, tell us more about your business and how you are working with not-for-profits.
So there's two iterations of my business, and I'll just fast forward with it. So the first one was building websites, and I did that from a very young age, from 19, when I thought I could take over the world and I was invincible and nothing could, you know, hold me. I didn't know where I was going, basically. And at about 26 or whatever, my best friend, my now wife, and my parents, you know, were telling me, hey, you got nothing to show for it. What are you doing? You know, and it wasn't until I'll call her an angel, Jill Dixon. I remember her, came in. She was an ex-manager of Cadbury Schweppes. And she said to me, you know, something she said just clicked. She said, for the amount of turnover, the amount of stress, the amount of team you have, this is not a normal operation. And I was like, oh, okay. And I listened to her, and I didn't listen to these three people that were my family. And that got me to change. So I then went and worked for Clemenger. I sold that business, by the way, at 26. And that was the only time I actually made money from the business, when I actually sold it. And then I worked at Clemenger to try and learn a little bit more from them. And I got to explore beautiful opportunities with some really great not-for-profit organizations like Diabetes Victoria, 1-3 Quit. There's so many. There's Melbourne Girls Grammar, all these other sort of unis and everything in schools. And then I went and worked for a friend selling websites and started to get into consulting. And that's when I kind of felt that there was this mishmash or missing part in the sort of the dialogue between an agency and a client, where an agency wants to get the work done really quickly and move on to the next project and want to charge a certain amount. And the client wants to get the most out of that budget. And they're asking lots of questions because they don't know what they're getting into. So there's a lot of education. And I thought, oh, and at that time, there was a lot of divorces happening, by the way. And there was a stat like 1 in 2 people getting divorced, and there's all these mediators around me. There was a lot of this conversation. And I thought, oh, I could be a mediator for web development and for digital marketing. And so that's how it came about. That's how the idea came about in about 2012 or 2011, something like that. In the last 10 years, I've been offering this consulting, mediating, virtual digital marketing manager type product to try and like have that conversation between the agency and the client and say, hey, we're both not right. We're both not this. Let's both come to the party and be more collaborative for the better good of the result of what that's going to give, rather than trying to win at this one project or this one conversation. And so,
okay, yeah, so let's break that apart a little bit, because I feel like some of our listeners may not actually be familiar with how an agency works. That's mostly a project-based marketing agency, yeah? So in the digital space in particular, other than building websites, what other kind of projects might you do in that space?
So a typical agency has a lot of layers. So they have like a BDM, an account director, an account manager, then a senior graphic designer and a graphic designer. That's like sort of one side of the thing. When sometimes organizations or smaller businesses or whatever just need maybe a senior designer and a designer. They don't need everything else and all the different layers. Besides websites, other things that you can build are like email marketing campaigns, social media campaigns where you have to create the content as well. So it's not just posting on social. So that's quite a big part of what digital or agencies do. And they also, they are actually very good at writing eye-catching and ear-grabbing content. So they're very good at that. So you'll notice a lot of their stuff goes viral, or you'll see it win multiple awards. So agencies are really good at that stuff. Yeah.
So a not-for-profit project of this sort, I'm just picturing for them, would be they have their spring appeal going out for a fundraiser. They need to try to raise as much possible during that period of time. And so that agency would actually put together the entire project, right? Where they're going to be sending out direct mail and through the normal post office, and then they're going to be sending email and social media and things. Is that what you mean by that? Okay.
Yeah. So usually there's a communications or marketing manager at a not-for-profit organization that comes up with the campaign idea or the brief. And then they go and sort of recruit an agency and try to see if there's a good match between values, but also skill set and capability. And then the agency will come back to them with pitching an idea, saying, this is what we believe we should do. We should go on this channel or this channel, whatever it might be, like Facebook, for example, or YouTube, whatever it might be. And then they come up with, these are the kind of outcomes or results that we're trying to strive for. And then that's how the campaigns form. So, yeah, it could be a fundraising campaign, could be a volunteer drive, could be like now it's the end of financial year in Australia, at least, and everyone operates at a different calendar as well. There's end of financial years in March as well, so it's called calendar your financial year. So yeah, they come up with those kind of campaigns and really try to push it to get the most out of brand awareness or conversions. So there's those two things.
And do they get compensated just on a flat fee of doing the work, or are there agencies, especially in the not-for-profit space that we're talking about here, are there agencies that are willing to work based on the results of the campaign?
You would find that they're probably, depending on where that organization or not-for-profit or charity is based, like where they're based, you'd probably find a few different partnerships that agencies are willing to kind of undertake. The very rare one is pro bono. So they'll do the full campaign pro bono, because there is some level of expense that needs to be covered. And if they have great discussions, you can actually get, you know, a good, you could go, like a lot of people I know that do a 50-50. Mm. So at least they're getting to work with a massive branded agency that's going to do a great job, and they don't have to pay that full price. That usually helps, but they've got some juniors helping them. Mm-hmm. Then you've got others that are probably charging just a flat fee. So it's a project or campaign fee. Then there's others that charge a small retainer ongoing, because if it's leading up to something like a soft launch or something, they'll have to start a lot earlier before it's that kickoff project and it's aligned with a TV or a radio ad campaign or print, mm-hmm. you know, as well as digital. And then the last one, I've very rarely seen it where there's a commission or like a clip. I'm seeing a lot in the tech space where like there's payment gateways or fundraising platforms that are now not charging monthly fees or any subscription fees, where they just have a clip. So as you transact, they'll charge 6% or something. Now, it might seem high, but if there's no monthly investment and no thing, the entry level's, you know, really good, and they get to use enterprise level software.
Yeah, that's really appealing for not-for-profits and not have to usually also pay for an implementation fee for that software. So I think, you know, from a capital budget perspective and ongoing operating, as long as your stakeholder is not upset about having to pay that fee, I guess it works for everyone, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I think, you know, you could always use it as a stepping stone, right?
Mm.
And see if you negotiate transactions later on. But yeah, those are the few different relationships that I've seen with agencies and vendors with organizations.
And when you said that you're more the mediator or the intermediary between the agency and the client, what kind of services does that translate to?
So over the last 4 or 5 years, we've really focused our energy and strength with not-for-profit organizations. And what we saw with my experience working at some agencies, and even just talking when you're in the network, you hear, is that a lot of organizations were spending a lot of money on just a website. So like $200,000, $300,000 for a website. And yes, it was great. It covered accessibility. It covered all the different departments, and there was content creation and everything. But the promotion of it or the campaign of it, it didn't even include those costs. And so sometimes a client's waiting 12 months or 6 months for the website just to be delivered. And what was happening in that media tree or the conversation that's missing is just asking the right questions. So, and then as an independent consultant, we would be asked to kind of go in, and I know a few others also that started at the same time I did when they found this gap. We just go in unbiased and just sit in the conversation. And then whenever, and we would mainly lean on the client side. So to make sure that, you know, okay, yep, we're getting told this, we're going to pitch, and we'll say, yep. And then we just ask the right questions. So have we thought about this? Who owns the source code? You know, who owns the rights to the IP when you're finished? When you talk about timeline, what happens if there's a bit of scope creep? Do we still finish phase one, or does everything get pushed back? And so those kind of questions were good to just lean a little bit on the client side, but we didn't have any bias towards any agencies because they're, you know, award-winning agencies that were coming up to the table, and they all had something, you know, different to give. So we would just help, I guess, ask the right questions, and the end decision was still made by the organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're acting at that time as kind of an advisor during the design process, and also was it also during the implementation process as well?
Yeah, it actually ended up, it started as the mediator thing, and then there was like, oh, could you help us project manage this? And we're like, well, okay, well, we'll help. And then it turned into the design process, and then the implementation and the testing, the training. We usually did the training after the initial training was done by the agencies. So it turned into a very much of this, where it's ended up today, which is very much of this like virtual digital marketing manager role, like, which is what we call it, because it's, we're not really physically in the office all the time, but we are some of the time. And this was pre-COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now, you know, everywhere it's all remote working, but we were remote working using GoToMeeting was the, wasn't Zoom. Zoom wasn't leading the way. It was GoToMeeting. And we were providing that virtual service through GoToMeeting. So, yeah.
So now that you're, okay, so you said digital CMO, basically.
Yeah.
I'm trying to picture how those interactions will work. So when I used to be the CEO of a charity, we had our own in-house graphic designer, marketing team. I wrote a lot of the copy myself. But then on occasion, we would go to an agency, especially for something we might be doing with our sister organizations, the national campaign. And then we would get some additional help to set up a different website, a new landing page, the whole graphic design piece behind it.
Yeah.
What part of that process would you help us with if you were offering that service?
So one of the things when we work with organizations is firstly, we just start to make sure that everything's in their control or their it's written all in their name and they own all the IP and everything. So we do a bit of risk analysis and a bit of benchmarking before we work with any client, just to make sure everything's kept in check. We then usually go into tracking, like reporting and tracking, because we always start with the end goal in mind. Mm-hmm. So it's like, whatever we're going to work on in the future, let's make sure we've got all of our elements and foundation in place so that we can do the right tracking and report properly for our board members, for our other key stakeholders, our partnerships and those kind of things.
So when you're baselining these things for the reports, I'm assuming you're talking about website statistics, SEO, or search engine optimization. Is that what you mean by that?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So it would be your website statistics. So people use Google Analytics or they use Adobe, whatever analytics platform. Then there's all the different social media channels that they might use. Some might use Instagram, some might not. So it's whichever ones they use, do a bit of a benchmarking of, you know, I'll come back to that. And then there's email marketing. There's SEO, which is search engine optimization, ranking on Google. Then there's the paid stuff of Google, which is called Google Ads. And then there's, Facebook ads. Those are the kind of the core things that we look at. Mm-hmm. And we also look at content. Like, so when we look at tone of voice, someone's brand style guidelines, photography, videography, and all the digital assets that come into play. And we have a benchmarking tool we use and best practice. So all of our other consultants and freelancers are all specialists in each field. And they've all got their certificates and all that, you know, in Google is. And then there's every organization, every company releases best practice. And so we make sure that these clients are, you know, don't have users that were there from like ex-employees that were there from 5 years ago that still have access to the Google Analytics.
Good point.
Little things like that. They don't have their passwords. They don't know their passwords and they're not secure. They're within someone's diary, you know, and that person's left. So it's all those little things and just getting up to a level that we feel it's almost like in your area, Tammy, like the systems requirements, you know, mm-hmm. So just getting them to a level where we go, yep, now we're comfortable to now start working together, because we found that with most organizations, they've got the talent there, right? They've either got great comms managers, great marketing managers, they'll have a great graphic designer, like you said, all the talent's there. Sometimes it's because they didn't have the best practice in place, or they just missed out a little bit on comms, or they didn't have something connecting with something else, that we find like just going through that little audit and strategic framework practice, we've already been able to fix 50% of their problems.
Okay. All right. So basically, like, you're putting in baselines in structure.
Yeah.
What about things as simple as design templates or tone of voice for their media? Because I know that that's a common problem when you have multiple people writing the same for different social media platforms, but different people are writing that oftentimes it doesn't sound like a single voice. Mm-hmm. Are you going down to that level of detail? I mean, the mechanics of search engine optimization is very technical, but these other things are more in that communication space are a little harder, I think, for a lot of organizations to put their hands on to say there's an issue here and we can't figure out what it is.
Yeah. So, apologies, I didn't answer your last question properly, but this sort of ties in with that. So what you've picked up on there is, the department's working in silos, and you've probably experienced this when you've worked with some organizations. We experience the same thing. And that's why I said the communication and the collaboration platform is not there for them to collaborate together. And so in many occasions, even though we're a digital marketing agency, we've gone in and installed collaboration systems like Rike or ClickUp or Asana or something like that to help collaborate and say, hey, before you start posting something, when you're using the calendar, very quick access to your tone of voice documents, very quick access to guidelines on how to use social and respond to critical situations, and having that as easily accessible to them so that they know where to start before they actually start producing content. And so that's very much of a hand-holding, training, mentoring, guiding kind of role that we would play. And just going back to the answer of your first question, like what would we do in a campaign, just a straightforward campaign, we'd only come in to fill in the gap. So similar to your experience with the agencies, even though we are on a retainer, we're like that magical unicorn that people look for. It's the only way I can explain it. I have explained it as the Avengers, the movie The Avengers, uh-huh. where, you know, we're all here to fight the greater cause. Everyone's got their specialty power, and whoever you need for that particular challenge or that mission, you know, we'll grab that person and they'll come to help you. My expertise is mainly in LinkedIn and strategy. I'm not great at copy. I've got a C grade average in English. I'm not good at all. I'm not good with video. And, social media moves too fast for me. And I've got other people that kind of help with that are amazing at that sort of stuff. And then they would come in to help with your content piece to do an evaluation of if the content was plagiarized, if it's not in the right tone of voice, does it fit on brand? Are we using terms that can be misguided? Like we mean something because it's our terminology, but to the audience, it means nothing.
Yep.
So yeah, that would be.
So it's really sound like you have a really broad set of specialized skills within your own team. When we think about charities and not-for-profits in general, what are some of the opportunities or quick wins that these organizations tend to miss out on?
I think we all have a bit of not FOMO, but this distraction we have for shiny new objects. And us as humans, we have the same problem, not just organizations. We look at an application and we think, oh my God, that application is going to save me 5 hours a day or 4 hours a day. I've noticed a lot with CRMs, for example, is a big conversation that we have because our website leads or website inquiries, a donor like expression of interest or whatever need to go somewhere. And whenever we mention the word CRM, half of the time they go, whoa, we need to speak to an IT consultant and we don't have a CRM, you know, and we don't know what to do with that. And it all kind of stops. And I feel like sometimes we're probably looking at everything like too big. It's like too grand, too big. And the concept that I like to use is if we looked at organizations, depending on where they are, right? So there's some really mature organizations that have got digital marketing down pat, and they just need to work with multiple agencies. But there are other organizations there that are looking for help, and they're at that crossroads of, do I build in a team internally, or do we continue to outsource, or do we have a hybrid version? What do we do? And I think sometimes there's an opportunity missed to go straight to outsourcing, because no one knows the organization better than internally. Mm-hmm. And having a great comms person internally that really understands the communication of how we do storytelling and how we, you know, what are we here for? And how would I explain it to someone else? And, you know, if they could have like a small 1 day or 2 day course on how to pitch, how to write stories better in a digital sense, like not really knowing who the audience is. We always know who we want to talk to, but sometimes someone else is going to look at it. It's not a real audience. There's these other little soft skills that I think they're called that I think would be a great place to start before you engage with digital marketing or digital consultants or people like ourselves, because once you get that bit, that foundation bit right, you've got all the great content and you can communicate and you can pitch for funding or for whatever. And so there's a multifaceted thing there as well, even the grant writing, whatever, you've already got all your content there. So I feel like that's probably something that's usually missed, and just going to outsourcing straight away. And then when you stop that outsourcing, you haven't actually gained any IP, you know, you haven't built any IP within your organization. So yeah, definitely that. Also looking, and I know this is going out globally, I mean, there's a lot of professional volunteers out there, okay? And everyone looks for volunteers to help them with an event that they're running, or I need, you know, X amount of volunteers to help collect some physical, like the shaking of the tins or whatever. But there's a lot of professional volunteers either in between jobs or happy to do their big paying jobs but still not getting much fulfillment out of their life, that are happy to devote 10 hours, 20 hours a month to do something, right? And that could be a massive piece. That could be a consulting piece. That could be helping with your reporting over a few months project. I think, you know, not always feeling like you have to go and pay an agency. You might get one bit out of this professional volunteer. You might get another bit out of an agency, and you might get another bit out of your internal setup.
Interesting. I want to go back to your first comment about comms in general. I've had a different experience, I suppose, and I tend to work with some of the bigger charities and not-for-profits myself. But what I often find is that they're very good about talking about what they do and sharing those stories, but they don't actually know how to get a return on that investment from a marketing perspective. So their fundraising team struggles when the communications team is really good about outbound conversations and talking about the mission and sharing these, you know, brilliant outcomes based on what they've done, but turning it into a donation, there seems to be a missing link there. And the fundraising teams are often on the other side of it saying, well, we're going to outsource that to an agency because our comms team doesn't understand that piece. What's your experience in that?
So a really good, and we know a couple of great organizations, the agencies that do a really good job. I know, I'll name the person that I know, her name's Richendo. Their agency does a great job. I think they raised like 18 million or something for the charities that they support, that work with last year. Us, on the other hand, we do something slightly different. We help with sort of more the funnel and the long game. So they would probably outsource to an agency to get a campaign drive happening, which is, you know, at that stage, the agency is presented with a problem and they go, okay, we're going to reach out to X amount of people. We're going to create this sort of drive, warm them up and give them the ask, and we're going to raise donations. And it's very much on that set time. The thing that I feel like some organizations might miss is actually playing that long-term game, is actually building up their databases. So it might be an email physical database. It might be in a CRM where you're building relationships and partnerships and collaborations to go one-to-many rather than one-to-one. Building their database on social media platforms, so on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn, bringing them back in-house. And having sort of a long play of running, you know, like you run webinars, you have email subscribers building, and having what's called like an evergreen kind of campaign, like a business as usual kind of thing that's running. Because if you're slowly doing that and you're increasing in small increments of 500, 1,000, 5,000, whatever, depending on your organization each month, when you then run that campaign of an ask campaign, because that's, I think that's what you're alluding to. I do notice a lot of ones, they just forget to ask.
Yes.
There's so many campaigns. They're like, you go, this is great. What do you want me to do next? You know, like, what am I doing next? Yeah. And there's no, like, we have such little time as consumers. It'd be nice to say something like, even the Olympic, like, you know, if you bought this balloon, this is what it will do for us. Yep. You know, they tell the story, they do everything, they've got the balloon campaign going and it's everything. I'm like, I don't understand the balloon. It sounds great. It's all really warm and fuzzy. They forget that little ask at the end and they don't give it enough airtime as well. It might just be a small donate now. Call us now. And I'm like, well, hang on, you're gone. The thing's finished. So I would say that the two things that they miss out is to have enough internal capability to be able to slowly build on their, so it's not a donor database straight away, right? It's a database,
right?
That can just, and then you initiate it with the campaign, and it just goes. But doing that over a period of time,
So more of a branding strategy rather than a fundraising strategy.
Yeah, so it's a more brand awareness, always on campaign, and then when you do the ask, it's more of a campaign conversion strategy sort of mentality, but you've already got everyone warmed up. All that storytelling that you mentioned that they do really well is all already being done and it's good and you've warmed them up. But then you would go and do the ask campaign and you've already got a massive amount of people there. You're not having to go search for it. And then it's either a great campaign or a flop. you'd have some sort of forecast also to be able to know how it's going to go. So.
And I suppose on a not-for-profit space, it's very similar, except instead of a donor, you're thinking about a potential member or someone in a professional organization, or depending on how what their mission is.
Yeah.
When we first talked earlier in the week, actually, because we had met, our organizations had met through a conference maybe a week or so ago.
Yep.
You mentioned the fact that a lot of people, a lot of not-for-profits and charities are not familiar with Google Grants. Do you want to talk about that opportunity that's being missed?
Yeah, so this time last year, I actually met with the Google representative from Sydney. She came down and we had a great conversation, and they were saying how they love giving organizations the opportunity to tell their story. And I read on their website as well about what Google is doing, and it's very much about them wanting to give airtime to organizations to get that paid advertising out there in front. It's almost like an instant thing, and I'll go back to explaining what it is, but to get that message out in front of users using Google straight away. That's what they want to do. And they want to just help as many organizations as they can do. So they created this product called, and it's in US dollars, it's up to $10,000 per month of Google ad spend that they will give an organization, a charity, to tell their stories, to bring more traffic to the website. And that's a massive amount, right? That could be up to $120,000 a year.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah. And they provide a lot of training, resources, and material that you could just apply for the grant. So you go to, if you just search into Google ad grants for not-for-profits, it'll come up. It takes you about 40 minutes to an hour to register to apply for the grant. So it's not like other grant applications where, you know, you need a grant ad specialist or something like that to apply. No, you can do it yourself. You go to TechSoup or Connecting Up. I think it's TechSoup globally. Excuse me. And you apply for the process. Once you get accepted, they've got enough training material online where you can create your ads. And pretty much as those ads get approved, you can start getting traffic to your website. It's such a missed opportunity. And I heard this from someone else, so I haven't coined this, the return on opportunity. So everyone's looking on return on investment for everything with digital marketing, even with paid, like, well, if I spend $1, I want $4 back and all this sort of stuff. This Google ad grant is a return on opportunity. It's not going to give you, no one's searching, I want to donate on Google, right? That's not what people search on Google. With Google, it's very much a pull mechanism. So if you look at marketing, social media, like Facebook and everything, is very much push marketing. It gets pushed in your face and we look at it and we get it and we go, okay, either I interact with that ad or not. With Google, it's very much a pull mechanism. So I will search something as a user, either problem or I'm trying to how to boil an egg or whatever it might be, right? I'm searching something and then I'll get a response. And the idea is that the organization, a not-for-profit, can have a response to that search and then be found for their content on their website. So that's the opportunity that Google are giving. And it's absolutely massive. And look, when the global pandemic hit, I did see a rise in a lot more people, organizations joining the grant. So we do have a great relationship with Google Ads and Connecting Up here in Australia and Melbourne. And so we saw a big uplift here, but we also saw uplift overseas. And they were getting quite busy in the applications. But there's still so many organizations out there that just think, oh, that's another grant. I don't know how to apply for it. I don't know. You could just start very slowly with what's called a basic brand campaign, which is just your names, you know, your name of your organization, misspelt versions of it, some services around what you offer, and you can just go live and not have to pay anyone to manage it or anything. And you can just start generating traffic. So it's a really good missed opportunity of something that Google's just so generously offering.
I was just thinking about the return on investment piece. I suspect that for most charities and not-for-profits, the number one way that they can actually use that grant is actually not necessarily a fundraising opportunity, but solving the community problems that they're already doing. If they're a social services provider, as an example, for homelessness or domestic violence or anything that's similar, that somebody might be looking for shelter or for some assistance, it seems like that it would be the most obvious way to use that grant is to in the service of their own operations and services. Is that how you're seeing people use it now?
Yeah, and coming back to that return on opportunity was just that, is that you don't physically get this $10,000, right? And you're not physically getting a $1 and $4 for the effort that you're putting in to create an ad. Not that it costs you any money. You're getting an opportunity to get in front of all of the potential people that can come to your and use your services.
Yeah.
So as you said, and we're seeing a lot of, if anyone's running events, it's doing really well.
Oh, good point.
Google Ads
place. Yeah. Okay. So like galas and any kind of fundraiser, really.
Yeah. So it's not getting the actual donation, but it's getting people to a gala or fundraising ball. And you use all these different terms because now, especially, you know, as the world is opening up and people are going to more, people are actually searching, you know, fundraising, like 5K fundraising runs. Gala balls and this for a charity or whatever. They're actually, those search terms are huge because they're looking at golf days for a charity.
Let's
say, you know, let's play golf, and while we're doing it, let's do it for a charity. I don't have to organize the day, but I'll grab 10 of our company thing. It's an outing for our company people, plus we're doing it for charity,
because
if you've seen the shift, if COVID's taught us anything, everyone's now employers, everyone's doing, wants to do something for purpose. They don't want to just do things anymore. Right. It's a massive shift. And so these search terms have just gone up. And so events are doing really well.
Uh-huh.
And you're not going to rank for the name you call your golf day. Charity golf day.
Right.
You can rank for,
Or a conference, right? Sometimes a lot of these organizations put on conferences for their constituents or professional organizations. Even those in the charity sector have done that for common interest, I suppose. I was also thinking about just the use of, if I was searching for something specific around volunteer opportunities.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So the conference one you mentioned is a very interesting one because, again, and this is one of the early questions you asked about missed opportunities, is also finding that fine line between sales and digital marketing. A lot of organizations try to steer away from talking too much about sales and a transaction. But at the end of the day, if we're going to lead someone from a Google ad to a conference, right, they're going to register at the conference. You're going to know a lot of the details, right? They're going to come at the conference. They could be a potential sponsor for your organization. They're not going to sponsor at that time. You need to put them into some sort of contact database and grab that lead. It's a lead, you know, it's a sales transaction. And then you've got to nurture that lead over time via email marketing or actually physically picking up the phone and calling them.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So there's so much there, right? The return on an opportunity for that Google ad that went out, that promoted your conference. They got all of these extra people there that you may not have got. Yep, you still got your, 80 whatever people, but you might have got 20 extra people that you wouldn't have got. And now suddenly you've got a return on opportunity to get some sponsors out of that, So I feel like the missed opportunities also are understanding a little bit about sales as well and the sales cycle, and not just jumping into something and saying, well, we're not getting it. You've got to understand that whole process and how we can maybe nurture those users and those people that are coming on board. Especially in a conference example that you gave, the volunteers is another one. If you create a volunteer ad campaign, these people are searching at nighttime, by the way. they're like, I'm not happy about something today, blah, blah, blah. What should I do? I'm going to search to see what I can volunteer. And we find that a mix of social media and so a bit of push marketing socials, and then they forget who it was. And then they go into Google to search that volunteer in Colorado or whatever it was, wherever it might be. And they'll put those keywords of a particular state or place. And you hope that your ad pops up, right?
Right.
If it's relevant. And they're not going to volunteer straight away. It's an expression of interest. So on your landing page, instead of just saying we're looking for these type of volunteers, and people have, they've just used the same about us story, and they're just saying, like, you know, the video, and then they've just gone, these are the volunteers we're looking for, here's a form. Now, you've made all this effort to get the person there. You should use this time to probably educate them a little bit, show them a little bit about what other volunteers have done in those different positions, like that buddy kind of thing, that if they became a volunteer, they might actually meet one of these volunteers to help them have a great experience. And to actually get them, take their excitement of already wanting to volunteer and now take it to the next level and say, this is the right place to volunteer. And then if they provide an expression of interest rather than applying for it, because if you're applying for it, it's a yes or no answer.
Yeah.
Right. Am I applying for it? No, I'm not ready now. I'm done. I'm done. I've closed.
Yeah.
I've gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've lost me. Give an expression of interest and say, yep, send me more information, or I'm happy to have a call, or I'm happy to attend a webinar where you might talk more about. Give them something to then get some of their details to then continue the conversation. And there's a perfect volunteer campaign that where you can build, you know, such a good database of people that at one stage wanted to volunteer, and for whatever reason, you know, they didn't hit yes right then, but you can continue the conversation. And you don't know what's in there, right? You don't know what their capabilities are.
I absolutely love that example, because I think, especially when you use an agency for a big fundraising campaign, this idea of landing page, or for those that are not familiar with the landing page, it's a separate website page that is very specific for that search or that Facebook ad or something that only the people that click on that will see. That allows you to interact in that way. And I think as not-for-profits and charities, we are so poor at thinking about landing pages for anything other than fundraising.
Mm.
So to, like you said, you're not ready to sign up on the line to say, I'm going to, you know, give you my Fridays every week for the next, you know, year. Yeah. But the idea of warming them like you would a donor makes a lot of sense to me.
Mm. Mm. And there's so many good case studies of, and these are other agencies and other organizations that have done this, that they've invited, like they've had a volunteer day where they've invited you, like an open day, right?
Right.
And they, you know, they've had to do it virtually over the last couple of years. There's examples of, you know, because what's missed out with the volunteer is like the professional volunteers again, because someone might volunteer for the stuff that you're advertising, but if you left it open and said, hey, what do you think you can help us with? You know, what a change of conversation, right? And you could come with so much more. Like, yeah, I can help you, you know, do that particular sausage sizzle, for example. Well, now we won't know what a sausage sizzle is. like, you know, like a
barbecue.
A fundraiser. a barbecue fundraiser, or, you know, a cake stall or whatever. Happy to help you with that once-off thing. But if I could say, actually, I'm a digital marketing professional, and I'm happy to give you 10 hours a month for 6 months and help you with anything you think you might need for digital marketing. It might just open up another return on opportunity. So, yeah, I think definitely rather than just looking at that initial just donor with $5, $10, those kind of things, if the education of landing pages could be opened up a little bit and looked at it as an opportunity, and you explained it very well, it's a specific landing page, is a specific, it's serving a specific purpose. It's just done for that one action. But if we can have multiples, like for potential sponsors, you know, if you really want to work with this organization, but you don't know how, you just want to, you know, like you just want to talk to someone, you know, there could be that. You know, let me help you. I don't know how, you know. There's that, there's volunteers, there's the ask, like you can do ask donation, ask giving ones really well. So it's ask to give for this program, ask to give for this, you know, now four students will be able to be educated, you know, rather than just the 5, 10, 50. And then after they've paid for it, then you say, oh, thank you. This will now help us do this. You know, you've got to get the messaging, the sequence of the messaging right as well and upfront.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to forget to ask you specifically about LinkedIn digital marketing, because I know that you're a specialist in that as well. I've actually had an experience where I was approached by a not-for-profit association organization to sponsor something. And they found me on LinkedIn, and then they were really good. They sent me an email, and then they followed up via a phone call later. And when I saw the original email, I looked at it, and I'm like, oh, well, I don't think it's aligned. But after they called me up post that, then they had convinced me that maybe that particular conference wasn't something I would sponsor for my business. But the organization and some of the opportunities that would come through that, the other part of what they do, actually might be worth sponsoring the organization for just in general. So yeah. I thought they were really clever in the way they used that, but I haven't really been approached that way before for sponsorship. What are we missing out on? If we have a charity or not-for-profit audience here, what are they missing out on in LinkedIn?
So being part of a number of conferences, we've actually helped like connecting up in Australia. There's one that happens every year. I feel like a lot of organizations are really nice. They're nice people. They love talking to their peers and saying, you know, what did you do here? And who did you use here? And that's kind of what they do, right? Again, it comes back to that sales component. So LinkedIn at the moment is really two things. It's somewhere where you can create your brand, your personal brand as a person, as a human. And the other thing, what it really is it's an online networking platform. And that again, unfortunately, comes down to sales and selling yourself, right? So these are the things that we're probably missing out as organizations, because again, it might be a skill set that's lacking, or we don't really want to talk too much about ourselves. Like we, again, as you said, they're happy to say what they do, but the networking or the sales thing and putting yourself out there is very different. It is very different. Creating a personal brand around yourself and not being too much ego and all that sort of stuff, but storytelling about your personal brand, your personal values. A lot of people don't want to do that. They're like, we'll have an organization page. But on LinkedIn, people are connecting with other people. They're not really connecting with organization pages. They're connecting with other humans because of their values, because of something that they do, because of something that's shared. And the networking opportunity on LinkedIn is huge. You can connect with someone based on a job title, based on where they work, based on similar interests, like the one-on-one connection. It's not like you're connecting with someone that's de-identified, which is on Facebook and everything. You don't know who you're connecting, who your followers are, who your connection is. On LinkedIn, you know exactly who the follower is. It's a one-on-one connection. And by doing the reach out, what that organization did, you can actually, if you have, we'd say 15 minutes a day and 1 hour and one solid hour somewhere in the week is a timetable that you need to put in. If you're just engaging and sending out those connections to the right people, to potential sponsors. So I just spoke with another organization just before this call, and they were looking for RTOs. They were looking for
that's a registered training organization.
Registered training organizations that deliver courses and diplomas and certificates. And then you've got your, they're looking for disability service organizations as well. Now, on LinkedIn, you can directly connect with those partners. You search by industry or sector, by job title, and you'll find those people. And then it's a matter of, and again, this is a sales sort of thing, of how do you approach that person without being too salesy straight away? And it's about the long-term game again, which is introducing yourself and saying, hey, we're on this platform together. I have looked at your content and actually genuinely look at the content. And I can see that you're doing this and this in this space. This is what we do. Would love to connect and see if there's any way we can share our networks or our contacts to help each other grow. Something like that, right? You can have variations of templates, but something like that. And then again, what they've done is they followed you up. So they've stored your information somewhere in a CRM, in a customer relationship management system or a contact database of some sort. And by giving a phone call and not just shooting emails after emails, they were kind of able to kind of change the dialogue with you depending on how you fit and give you other opportunities, mm-hmm. which is very, very smart. And they're at, you know, I think they've done a great job to be able to start from there and connect to there. Another thing you can do if you don't have the woman or manpower to do so is to actually grab that contact once you've got it, and you can put it into an email campaign. So you ask for permission and all those kind of things. And then you can send out some emails, or you can send up a follow-up message using a tool like Calendly, where you can say, hey, you know, if you had spare 15 minutes, would love to catch up for a virtual coffee or just a chat. Now, the issue that you have, and you'll only know this once you're working on LinkedIn, is there's a lot of people doing a bad job of this. So we feel like we're all just targeted and spammed every single day. Now, with LinkedIn, the beauty is that you can use some different tools. You can use video and you can use just audio if you're not confident enough. But what that does is it shows your sincerity. It shows who you are and who you stand for. It shows that you want to put your face in front of whatever you're doing and you actually genuinely want to connect. And so when we're looking for those high, what I call a higher ticket item, like a sponsorship partner or a collaboration partner, they're higher ticket items. I would definitely put in the time for a video or for a personalized video or something like that if you want to get the cut through and show the genuine and the authentic self or the organization that you're supporting and what you're doing to really bring that connection closer and the trust levels higher. But yeah, your example, they did a really good job in being able to jump on the phone. But yeah, some people don't have that time.
Well, a lot of them aren't used to it, are they? Yeah. It's not part of their day job usually.
It's not. There was one organization that used a piece of software. I've gone blank now. And if you do have this, we can add the link later on. And if you've got it on a website, they get someone in to just record all of these personalized videos.
Oh, it starts with a Z or yes. Z. It's not Zoom. It's Loop. That's actually Loop, isn't it? L-O-O-P. Yeah. It's really easy to do little videos. Yeah.
Yeah. And they just record 15-second videos and get the message. And they just do it in a batch. So they just spend 2 hours just recording videos. And then they just post it on places like LinkedIn to say thank you or to say whatever else the ask is. And it gets, you know, you get your name in there. So, hey, Tammy, you know, great to connect. I mean, you know, if you're getting a personalized video like that, you know that someone's given that time. You want to give a little bit more time, you know, back. So, yeah, there's clever ways to get cut through. And you just got to be strategic about it and not just do what everyone else is doing because it's just quicker and easier. Might as well not do it because you'd just be targeted as a spammer then.
And clearly a lot of these not-for-profits don't have a lot of resources to begin with in this space. If just conscious of time. So if one of these organizations, particularly in Australia, might need some additional support, what's the best way to learn more about what you do and how can they reach out to you personally?
Sure. So we find that the organizations that are starting to look to build their team internally are probably best suited for us. There's just a great partnership and a collaboration there because our intention is that after 12 months or 24 months, we've helped you benchmark, get momentum in whatever channel it is and hand that over back to you within the organization so you can have control within your organization because that's how it should be built. Agencies, freelancers, employees, everyone comes and goes, right? Whether it be 2 years, 5 years or whatever. But if you can have that strong foundation within your organization, that's magic. So if they're looking and they're having a gap, a resource gap, or someone's going on mat leave, or they're by themselves, they're in that startup phase of, you know, almost like a startup company where they're running on, you know, very little budget. They've got to justify everything. They don't know what they're doing. They could hire a social media person, but they don't know how to manage them. I don't know how to report. I don't know how to motivate them. I don't know how long we're going to keep them. Then it's a really good fit. And look, I'm quite busy on LinkedIn. So if you searched my name, Rodney Ferro, with this face, which you can't see, it's on a podcast, but if you could put my profile photo on there.
You'll see them on YouTube.
Yeah. That's probably the best. Otherwise, our domain name or website address is P for pretty and for nice.com.au. And we could just reach out and have a 15-minute chat or an hour chat and just see, you know, what challenges you're faced. We're all about, the reason I got into this was I heard a story from another CEO that started an organization that helped many organizations. And what his story was, he said he felt like he, you know, wanted to be a superhero to help save other people, like Superman and all those sort of things. But then when he worked out he could help many organizations at the same time, rather than working for one organization, that really sparked his interest. And when I heard his story, I'm like, wow, yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to be able to help many organizations at the same time. So we're pretty much set up not to take on clients all the time. We're happy to just to consult and give. If an organization is looking for professional volunteers or looking for some resources, or just wants us to review a proposal or an RFP that they've got out there or something, we've done in many of these engagements where they just might need a bit of a tweak, and then they're fine, they're back on the track, and then they're gone again. So yeah, definitely, you know, happy to help wherever it's possible, and happy to see where it might be a good fit for them too.
Okay, great. And what was the website again?
So the website address is P for pretty, N for nice.com.au. So that's pn.com.au.
Wow, that's pretty magic to be able to get such a short website address. So
23 years ago, remember? So back in the days where you didn't have to pay 50 grand, it's like, you know, you'd have to pay a lot for that domain.
Absolutely. That's why I had to ask you to say it twice. That's amazing. Rodney, thank you for your time today. Thank you for the wisdom you shared. I think there was a lot of good little nuggets of information in there that any not-for-profit or charity would definitely find some value in that. So thank you for sharing in the work that you do with not-for-profits. I agree with you. It is so much more rewarding now to be able to help a lot of charities and not-for-profits rather than just one. So keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Tammy. And thanks to the audience for listening. And I'll see you on the World Wide Web.
Hi, this is Tammy again. When I'm not doing podcasts, I'm helping not-for-profits with IT decisions. The question for this week's IT in Plain English segment is it better to keep my IT department in-house or to outsource it? This is actually a really tough question to answer because it depends on a lot of different variables. One of the first variables to consider is the size of your organization, because it actually impacts the cost analysis. The smaller your organization is, the more likely you should outsource this function. The second variable is capability. Even the largest organizations with an in-house IT department will actually outsource at least some of their IT functions, such as security management or website development. The reason for this is due to the cost of hiring and continuing to train these specialized skills when you may only need them for a few hours a week. The third variable is related to your core services. Sometimes it just doesn't make sense to invest in internal skills for a system or infrastructure if it's not supporting your core service for your organization. For those minor systems, it's probably better value for money to hire a contractor or even the vendor themselves for technical system administration. There are actually many other variables that may impact your decision. However, as a first step, I would recommend that you first identify your core business systems and the systems and infrastructures that support them, and then map them back to the skills of your current IT team, whether it be internal or external. If they lack those skills, the next question is, can they obtain them? Or do they actually want to obtain them? Because it does require a time investment on their part. For this is the primary business case of either training them, hiring new people, or outsourcing some or all of that work. So there you have it, in plain English. If you have an IT question you want answered, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn and send me a message. I just might answer it on the show. And if you liked what you heard, please subscribe and leave a review. To all of you executives with a cause, the world is definitely a better place because of you. Thank you for what you and your teams do every day.